All right, guys. Thanks for joining me today. I got this idea. I recently picked up the card game again after a very long hiatus. I played a little bit when I was a teen in high school, but there wasn't really anyone around me that played, and so had to set it aside. The cards themselves survived many, many, many moves over the years, and kind of I got back into the BattleTech itself, tabletop, last year and a half or so, and then I played a little bit with my girlfriend. The tabletop's a little too slow, but I floated the idea of getting into the card game with her, and she liked that. And so, kind of, I stalked eBay for a couple of weeks. Found some starters that weren't too inflated. Picked them up and got going. And we've been having a ton of fun with it. And so, found each of you guys through Facebook. Through the group, Michael, that you and Peter have set up, and Chester as a frequent poster there. And so I thought it would be fun to kind of bring you guys in and just kind of talk a little bit about the game to give people a history that might be getting in, since it is kind of long retired, and resources might not be the same to find as other games. And so thank you guys for kind of agreeing to sit down and talk about this game and kind of where it is and what's been happening with it through the years.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about it.
Awesome. I
Can't
also want to
wait.
add that although I'm wearing a Nace shirt, I am in fact not a Davian fan. It's just
Fair.
my only BattleTech shirt.
Oh,
Hopefully the
well,
Kickstarter stuff will
mentioning
come.
BattleTech shirts, I don't know if you can notice where it says 1999 champion there.
There we
Yeah.
go. Champion what? All right, what's the champion of?
So there was they did regional championships, and then if you won at the regional champion, you could be invited to the world's cup, as it were.
Yeah.
And for 99, I won for the Northern California deal, which was a lot of fun because I got to beat Peter Sundholm. And he gave me a little card with his, it was his card that he had made because he won the previous year. And on it, he wrote to me, better lucky than good, which was absolutely fine. Didn't bother me. It was absolutely true. There were only 16 people there, so I had good odds.
Yeah. Awesome.
I was
And
a teenager when the competitive scene was going, and I was living in New Zealand, but we did have tournaments.
there you go.
And so you guys both dove in kind of in the original run, did it?
Yeah, we had a surprisingly good BattleTech scene now that I think back on it. We probably had about 20 active players in my town.
Okay.
And so we did have our tournaments, but there was never any question of going anywhere serious. And
Fair.
in fact, when I later came to the United States, I now live in the Bay Area, and I encountered other BattleTech players, most notably Peter, who it's a shame he couldn't be here today. There's something about having like a metagame, which is, the space of ideas that the people in your local vicinity have. And that space of ideas can be very restrictive, right? If nobody in your group ever thought to do something, then it wouldn't occur to you that it was possible, and you would be completely unprepared for it when you see it. So there's a lot of things that I learned that we just hadn't explored back in my old hometown when I ran into folks like Peter and more experienced high-level players.
Well, I think it's fascinating. I played a little bit of Destiny last year, and I played X-Wing before that, X-Wing miniatures, and looking at how much raw information is out there on the internet, and then thinking back to kind of the early days of when these games were launching, when Magic was getting off the ground, and just how different it was just to understand the game and to kind of get those advanced strategies and how the people that were actually getting in the work, rather than just anybody with an internet connection would really be able to kind of excel kind of on that metagame.
Right. You never really quite understand something until somebody else uses it to beat the pants off you.
Yeah, definitely.
One thing
Yeah.
that we never suffered from when BattleTech was out, it was the internet wasn't going that fast, and you didn't have the problem of dealing with net decking that
Oh,
you
yes.
dealt with Magic a lot. It was a raw, Wild West, shoot from the hip kind of experience. It only lasted 4 years, and what you saw is what you got. Interesting thing about the game that shows this is in none of the rule books that were published, none of them was there a card limit for individual cards. Like in Magic, you can't have more than four of this card.
Right.
that never existed. So one of the first large tournaments that they had, some guy brought in, there's this one card, it's a Sentinel. It costs zero to get it down, period. So he brought a deck of nothing but that, you know, 60 of that 60 card.
60 Sentinels.
Wow.
60 Sentinels. And, you know, it was an interesting experience that they had. Well, immediately right after that, they put into the DCI rules a maximum of six of any card, you know. But although it got into the DCI rules, it never got put into later editions of the rule book.
Interesting.
And so that's why I say the whole Battletech scene, as far as a card game was concerned, was very much a wild, wild west. You never knew what was going to happen. You know, my own deal where I won the regional, even though there were only 16 guys, I brought along a Comstar, and I called it a Please Kill Me deck. There is a Comstar pilot that when he hits you, that you get to look at like the top six or eight cards, is it? And you get
Comstar Deep Agent.
Yes, and you get to put like the top six or eight cards of his deck back in any way you want to. So you run him in there, you do, and it's okay if the other guy kills you. It's like, please kill me. And then when he does, then you get to reset his deck. And so I don't think anybody had seen that one at the tournament, and I actually got to win. Now, like I said, I was playing with a couple power players there, and yeah. So this is the kind of thing that you ran into.
Now, interesting story about the Comstar Deep Agent. It turns out that it was missing from the official card lists. And so there's a number of places that you can go where you go looking for official data about the Crusade expansion, and the Comstar Deep Agent's just not there.
Wow. So he's,
that may be,
you're saying he's really good at his job.
Right. That may be why, Chester, that people were so surprised. They may not have seen it, and when they perused the official lists, it wasn't there.
You got to get lucky once in a while, buddy.
Hey,
even the dead clock's right twice a day.
You win with the rules that you're given, not the rules that you think should be there. How did that 60 Sentinel list come out in the tournament?
I don't remember the.
No, it's very much a legendary tale. It mm-hmm. actually happened. One of the people on the Facebook page, was either there or talked to some people that were there. You know, it's just one of those things, those anomalies that happen that reset, you know, the whole atmosphere. It's just a fun thing.
There are a lot of people who were at the core of the competitive scene. Sundholm, Cab Hammer, I don't even know what his real name is, Silly Wiz, Champion of Solaris, and now a lot of them never came back, but at least two of them are still in the group and they're still chatting. Gustav Olsen is Champion of Solaris and Mark Roberts is Silly Wiz, and both of those guys have an enormous cachet. They were definitely at the heart of the competitive scene. They understand the tech, you know, what works and what doesn't at a level that's definitely considerably beyond my own. So I would love to pick their brain at any point.
Definitely. That can be a future episode for sure.
Yeah.
Did you guys both get into it at Limited, or did you kind of pick it up a little bit later in the
Oh run? Yeah, Limited. Yeah. I remember I was about 12, 13 years old, and I got to be, I was allowed to be taken by my mom and dropped off at like a games day that we used to have. You know, some people rented out a room in a building and they played a bunch of games, right? This was the early 90s. Of course, we have those are everywhere now. But I was one of the first things that I was allowed to attend by myself and then just pick me up later in the day, right? And they were playing Battletech, the tabletop game. Yeah. And I was excited to be doing anything the grown-ups were doing. And I got into it. And so I got into the original board game, and I got into the lore and the novels. And then when the card game came out, I said, I've got to pick me up this thing. And so that's what I spent my pocket money on. Right.
Excellent.
I was a kid.
It's a good thing to spend I was in
my early 40s when it came out. You know, I had been doing Battletech, you know, a long time. So, you know, I, like you said, you know, you start with the miniatures, you read all the books, and then when the card game came out, bam, you jumped in with both feet. And it was easy for me because by that time the miniatures game was just it was too slow for me at that point as well.
Yeah.
The card game is just, you know, it's gunslingers.
Definitely.
Fast.
And what, how did the competitive scene evolve back then? Was there an organized play through Wizards, the same, you know, as, you know, a lot of current games have, or was it a lot of player organization? You know, how was that set up, and how did you guys find out about all those, you know, those bigger tournaments?
Here in Northern California, it was just like a version of Friday Night Magic. You know, it was the same kind of thing. It would run it usually on a Saturday, you know, sometime, and that's when we would go, me right. and all the other guys. Yep, yep.
We had a guy whose name was Richard, and he had set himself up as like the local singles magic dealer. That was just his thing. He would come to games days, and he'd have all of these large binders, and he'd buy and sell cards. And he, you know, it's another Richard Garfield game, so he did that as well. And he organized the tournaments. He had the prizes and everything. And I still remember my first tournament win. It was so sweet. I'd gotten to the finals. And I was playing against a man like 25 years my senior, if not more. And I was doing it with a Sandhurst Royal Military Academy deck. And of course, we'll get into what that represents later. Yeah. But the prize on offer was a full set of Limited.
Oh.
And it was, wow. I mean, my eyes bugged out of my head because, you know, again, I'm 15, right? Yeah. And I made a deal with him. I said, no matter who wins or loses, how about you get the 5 or 6 cards from that set that you need, and I get the entire rest.
Yeah.
And we made a deal before the game. I'm pretty sure I won, but it was a good deal. And that's really that got me going on collecting, of course, too.
Yeah.
Was my only tournament win, I should mention.
Fair. Now, what was, you know, kind of the progression and, you know, in the game community in terms of how was BattleTech received back then? You know, for me, I was so out of it. I mean, I was just, there was literally no one in my community that played, and I just picked it up because of my love for BattleTech. And, you know, when I was in high school, my English teacher once told me every book report I turned in was a BattleTech novel, and eventually he's like, these are great, but I need you to read something else. And eventually I just kept reading BattleTech novels. So it was definitely the love that got me to it. Unfortunately, the community didn't have it. So, you know, just hearing about how that evolved and what was the game? Like, what was the general reception? Was there a lot of energy behind it? Or did you find that it was mostly just BattleTech players that were picking it up back then? Or was there a lot of people drawing to the game because of the structure and dynamic of it?
It was something between BattleTech and Magic players. Because of course the game has the same bones as Magic the Gathering, right? It's right. You tap resources to build things, you tap things to attack, you draw cards every turn. You know, it feels like it has the same bones. I remember, so Limited came out and Unlimited came out, and everybody was really happy. And then the first expansion was due, and it was Counter-Strike. And Counter-Strike is awful. Like, it's so bad. There are 2 or 3 cards in there that make it into most decks. They're very good. There's Overrun. There's Black Market Connections. There's a few bits and bobs. But in general, it's bad. It's dire. And people were so angry. Mm. But then Mercenaries came out relatively quickly after that. And at that point, it ramped up. This is what's interesting. There's when you talk to people who want who think about pricing and cards, they're all cued from the Magic world. And in the Magic world, older is more expensive. But in the BattleTech world, older is cheaper for 2 reasons. One, because the print runs got smaller, right, as they went along.
Right.
And the other is because the cards genuinely got better. Like, the cards in Arsenal and MechWarrior are better than the cards in Limited and Counter-Strike. And the cards in Crusade are better than the cards in MechWarrior and Mercenaries. There's a slope of the designers becoming better at understanding what works and what doesn't and why it doesn't.
So was that a power creep effect, or was that just better gameplay and design mechanics there coming in?
All 3.
Sorry. Well, yeah.
I would say it's all 3. There's a definite bit of power creep that you can see. Mm-hmm. The other 2 factors, you know, the better design as they went along and got better at it, you know, the genius to me of what Garfield did was not only to, you know, create the whole CCG industry, all right, but was that he would put together a platform and say, okay, here's what we got. And then from there, he would hand it off to other people who would take it over and would see the potentials of what could possibly be, and they would expand upon that. And as they got along and more familiar with the system and how they all integrated work together, they put together cards that were easier to integrate and did more things and did them more efficiently. And I think we tend to, especially in card games, to equate efficiency with power creep. They're not necessarily different things, but they are. Efficiency is what's the word I'm looking for here? Anyway, you get the idea. Okay, efficiency is looked at as power creep because, in a sense, it really is.
Right.
But there's another piece to this, which is that there is the variability. So one of the classic problems the BattleTech CCG has is that most command cards are not very good, in the sense that command cards that cost a deployment, that sit on the table and have an effect and cost resources, are generally not as good as having another mech of an equivalent value. So if you're going to play a 4 cost command card or 4 cost mech, you're better off playing the mech. And that imbalance is present from the very beginning. There's a huge pile of cards in Limited that are essentially trash command cards. They just don't work better than having another mech in your deck. Mm-hmm. And that is something that the original designers don't seem to have grasped, but improved over time. It's still a problem, and we can get into it when you talk about basic tactics.
Hold on. Before you get there, let me give you – you were a kid when this was all happening. I was an adult. It saw it from a slightly different perspective. Mm-hmm. When Magic the Gathering came out, okay, it was an explosion, all right? There was a period there – in the mid-90s, where for about 4 or 5 years, Magic the Gathering made Wizards of the Coast more money than all the other money in the entire rest of the hobby combined. It was insane. Over the years, there have been like over 200 some odd different CCGs that have come and gone. To this day, you can count on fingers of one hand how many are still there. That includes Magic, it includes Pokemon, and it includes
Yu-Gi-Oh.
Those three are owned by
Netrunner.
And that is Netrunner still being
as in an LCG format.
Okay, so
I guess that doesn't count.
Wizards isn't doing it. Okay, so there's Versus, and there's a couple that are trying to make a comeback, like Lord of the Rings, or not Lord of the Rings, but Legends of the Five Rings. So that's about it. Okay. So you can, it's easy to make one. It's not easy to make one that will make it past, you know, the first or the second expansion, right, or to keep going in the long run. So this format was very iffy and would come and go. The problem what happened with BattleTech was that it hit the ground running. Like Michael said, when it hit the ground, it was great. It hit the ground running. Counter-Strike kind of slowed it up, but they had a policy for some reason with BattleTech that they didn't always with other products. They had the expansions coming out, following up after each one, fast and furious. In the 3 to 4 year time span, you know, it lived from 97 to 2000. You know, they got, what was it, 8, 9 expansions? 7.
Crusade has a 1999 mark. So
yes,
3 years.
Yeah, that was, you know, that was it. And yet, you know, it just blew the place out. So what happened with it when it died was that the folks that had been the brainchild that made BattleTech, they got into a lot of internal squabbles, and they started to overreach, you know, how they wanted the BattleTech card game to look like as well. It caused internal strife. This was the point, this is the beginning of where FASA kind of lost their mind, as it were, and fizzled out. And, you know, then we know the history of all that. But basically, Wizards said, you know, look, we've got enough doing with Magic and everything else that's going. This has been a really nice ride, but you know, we don't need this headache. If you're not going to let us do it, and I think there's a possibility that they were aware of the internal politics that were happening at FASA, recognized before the rest of the gaming world that, you know, this was going to blow up soon. And so they just bowed out and said, you know, sorry, that's all there is. They continued to make product for about another year. That's why I say up to 2000. The copyright was 99, but they continued to make more stuff for about a year. Then they just stopped producing it altogether. Within another year after that, I think 2001 or 2002 was the last time they had any sanctioned tournaments for it. And and then here we sit 20 years later, you know, pining for the old days, because in my opinion, BattleTech technically for its design, for its play, is a better system than Magic the Gathering. And a number of people that I've played with over the years felt pretty much the same way.
I want to add a piece there. A few years ago, I was able to get an introduction to Richard Garfield. One of the people who worked at my company was an old friend of his, and I don't know how it came up. But if you go look, I'm sure we can put it in the show notes. If you go look in the files of the Facebook group, you will find an interview with Richard Garfield. And I want to read you a particular relevant little chunk. This is relatively small. This is what he had to say about why. He said, why did the development not get the support it needed? He says, the company realized around BattleTech that hobby properties were never going to make financial sense for a TCG when weighed against Magic, since the cost to change games was so high for a player. If we did manage to get a big success, which would be next to impossible, it would be disastrous, since it would hurt the Magic player base. Because of that, Wizards began focusing on mass market properties, Harry Potter, Xena, Hercules, and of course, Pokemon. Product development began to focus on products that would eventually get people into Magic rather than satisfy the fringe of Magic players who wanted something new. So to paraphrase what he's saying that the format is the defining characteristic, not the intellectual property. The format of a CCG is what is important. And in that sort of environment, it's very hard to maintain multiple CCGs without cannibalizing yourself. And you never want to cannibalize your own sales.
Yeah, I found that article. I'll definitely include in the show notes. It's really fascinating, that conversation. Was that an in-person conversation, or was that an email exchange?
That was by email. That was an email exchange.
But yeah, it gave a lot of great insights. And I was particularly really interested in what he had to say about the challenges of designing the game with FASA, I guess it would have been at the time, kind of trying to dictate how it flowed thematically and how it tied in, and how that limited a lot of his card design issues in terms of maximizing it between adding all the factions and trying to, isolate, between Inner Sphere and whatnot. So I'll definitely include that in the notes for people to read along.
Excellent, because it really truly is, to my knowledge, the only in-depth interview with Garfield about BattleTech, and it absolutely is the best insight, from the creator, that you're going to find anywhere on the net. So thank you for putting that in. That's, if you want to know anything about BattleTech and the designer, and how it, how it all relates, you won't find any better piece at all.
And you had mentioned this, Chester, and I've heard other people mention this before about just the quality of the game design of BattleTech as compared to kind of other card games. And I have very limited experience with other card games. Even Magic, I only played very briefly in high school. Can you guys kind of expand on that a little bit, assuming that you have more experience with those other card games, of what it was, what those strengths were, and how BattleTech, structurally, in terms of the game mechanics, excelled as compared to other games, and what, sure. Maybe also what weaknesses that were present there that might have held it back.
Let me take a stab at this one. So the great strength that BattleTech has that Magic does not have is the tap to attack, tap to block, and you can attack anything system. So for folks who aren't quite clear, in Magic, you can only ever attack the opposing player, i.e. the stockpile. And you attack everything in one go, and everybody attacks individually and blocks individually. So the decision in the attack phase is, who should I attack with? And it's a singular decision. right? I'm going to attack with A or B or C or D or A and B and C. If you have banding, you do, the ability, you do get a few extra choices, but it's relatively straightforward. The focus in Magic is on the card play, the sorceries, the instants, the cards that come from the table to affect the game and then leave the game. In Battletech, because you can attack anything, you can attack any card that's face down or face up on the table, you can attack the opposing player via the stockpile, you can attack opposing units, and you can do everything sequentially. And so that means you get into this really interesting situation where you're sitting at a table and you've got maybe five units and they've got maybe four units, and there is a bunch of valid and interesting targets that you might want to hit. And you start thinking to yourself, well, if I attack this with these people, then he will probably do that. And if he does that, that opens him up for this. And so you get into mind games, right? You're trying to model what your opponent will choose to do based on what you do. And I have found that this is by far the deepest aspect of the game. It's enabled me. I'm a relatively competent player, and I've only gotten better over time. I have been in situations where I have been down on the table, right? I have had three units to my opponent's five, or not, you know, I've just been in a situation where somebody walking by would objectively say, this isn't looking good for you, buddy. But because of my ability to effectively model what my opponent is likely to do, and how they're going to react to an opening, like I'm playing against a person and I understand that that person is inherently cautious, which means that I can leave myself slightly more open to attack than I otherwise would without necessarily expecting that they would go for the jugular. And so I can use my consecutive table play during the missions phase to effectively pick apart and generate beneficial trades that bring me back to a good situation. This table play aspect is by far the best thing about Battletech CCG. Apart from, of course, the thematic elements, right? Who doesn't like giant robots shooting each other?
Right.
The weakness that I think is the most glaring in the game is what I like to call the Battletech CCG original sin. So imagine for a moment Magic, right? Magic, the basic idea is that a 1/1 creature costs 1 mana, a 2/2 creature costs 2 mana, and a 3/3 creature costs 3 mana, and so on, right? And so you've got this linear scaling. I've had a lot of opportunity to look at the way that mechs are designed for the card game and how they're costed out. And it turns out that this costing formula is a real problem. It's something like this. You pay one resource for every point of attack, half a resource for every point of structure, 2/3 of a resource for every point of armor, and one resource for every speed above slow. Right? That basic formula, when you apply it to most simple mechs, will get you roughly what they cost. Although I've been informed that's a reverse engineering, that it wasn't originally designed like that. But here's the catch. Every mech gets 5 free points. So a 0-cost mech has 5 points worth of stuff, and a 1-cost mech has 6 points worth of stuff, and a 5-cost mech has 10 points worth of stuff. And now imagine take this back to Magic again. Imagine what Magic would look like if a 3/3 cost 1, a 4/4 cost 2, and a 5/5 cost 3. All of a sudden, there is a bias down, right? Why pay 4 resources for a 6/6 when you could pay 2 resources for 2 3/3s? You wouldn't. And so these 5 free points generates the reason why Battletech is susceptible to swarm tactics, to lots of small mech. It's the reason the urban mech deck works. It's the reason free deploy is so dangerous. It's the reason that the Sandhurst Royal Military Academy deck is so dangerous. Any time that playing a card, because playing a card gets you 5 free points worth of stats,
there's now, this Michael, downward bias. What are those 5 points? Can you go back?
Okay, I'll give you an example. The Hollander, that's a crusade mech. It's a 0/4/2 moderate free deploy. So 2 attack is 2 points. 4 structure is another 2 points. Moderate is a fifth point. Free deploys an ability that generally costs about one resource. So six resources, but you get five free. The mech costs one.
Gotcha.
I'll do another one. The Masakari, I don't know, the 310-8 one. 8 points for attack, plus another 5 points for a structure, which we're going to call is free, plus 2 points for 3 points of armor. That's 10. And remember, I already gave the structure for free. The mech costs 10, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can basically get a 0-4-3 slow mech for a zero resource cost. Three for attack, two more for structure, mm-hmm. and nothing else. Zero cost. But if you want to add one more attack to that to get a 0-4-4 slow mech, now you're paying one resource. And all that means that drawing more cards and playing more mechs that are cheap works really well. Because every time you play a cheap mech, you get five free resources worth of armor, structure, and attack. If you want like the ultimately effective version of this, you could play with the 0-2-3 slow free deploy mech for zero, right? 1 point for the structure, 3 points for the attack, 1 point for the free deploy. So it's a zero cost, no deployment cost, 0-2-3 mech. You make a deck that's entirely full of those things, plus extra card generation, and you just destroy your opponent because every mech you get down on the table gets you five free points of resources.
Right.
It's really the heart of the problem. And there's no way to fix it because you can't recost all the cards.
And now, did you?
Hold on. That's absolutely true. The thing that I always go back to, though, when he talks about the costing thing, is that if it was only true for some of the cards, in other words, if there were cards that were thrown in there that break that rule, for, you know, insert reason here, like they do in Magic, okay, then it would be a problem. But because all units are costed that way, I think it tends to even itself out. And why other decks, you know, have a chance and can work.
I've got to disagree with you there.
That's okay. And he does every time. We've had this discussion many times. He tends to look at the game from an analytical point of view. When he puts a card in his deck, he's thinking about it in terms of tournament worthy. Okay. Well, if I take this to the world, will I be able to win with it? If I can't, if that doesn't do the job for me, it doesn't go on my deck. I'm more of a laid back person. I'm a casual player. I'm playing the game for fun. I want to make as many different decks based on as many different concepts as I possibly can. And win or lose, I have fun playing all of them. Now, granted, it's so much more fun to win. And every once in a while, I surprise him with a little deck that I put together that he didn't see coming. And I kick his butt with it and go, how did you do that with those cards? And, you know, so there's the surprise. And, you know, I got the shirt, right? Beat Peter Sundholm. So that aspect of it for me works just fine. And so there is this internal conflict that goes on. Mathematically, it doesn't always work out the way it probably should. But mathematically, it also does not work the same way that Magic does. But for the player side, it works just fine. One thing that Magic does that Battletech does not do is Magic likes to throw a lot of cards in there. Well, not a lot, but enough. Say, if I play this card, I win the game. Bam, that's it. There's, you know, nothing you can do. There are literal Magic cards that say, if you do this, you win the game. Doesn't happen in Battletech. You have to earn it. Now, you may be sneaky. You may get the biggest, baddest boy on the deal on the table that the other guy can't find a way to deal with. But there are no cards in Battletech that just say, I play this and I win the game. And
that's
I think that's the saving factor, the saving grace, if you will. considering the original sin, as Mike likes to point out.
So if I can put a sort of a more social point on this, or like, what are the consequences? So every time I hear a player, especially a relatively inexperienced player, say, swarm decks always win at Battletech, I'm always reminded of the sort of the social structure that says, the social structure that comes from the actual Battletech game, which is, my job is to figure out the best way to beat you within the rules, right? And I'm going to come, I'm going to take my loss, and then I'm going to rework my design, personally designed mix, or I'm going to rework my tactics, or I'm going to rework my force composition. I'm going to come back and I'm going to win, right? And so there's that social structure that says, you know, a good general wins the war and then fights, right? The old Sun Tzu line, right? A good general builds his deck the right way and then he wins. In order to do that, what you do that is you take advantage of what I call spikes in the meta, right? The meta being the space of things that work well and things that don't work well. Battletech CCG has spikes in the meta, and some of those spikes can be really destructive, most notably the swarm spike, right? And there are really only two ways to deal with spikes in the meta. Three ways. The first is to patch it. The second is to release cards to compensate against it. And the third is to make a gentleman's agreement not to use it, right? And I think that third one is where Chester comes in. Chester likes to explore a wider space in the meta. And so Chester is asking very nicely to play against people who are not exploiting this spike, and he promises also to not exploit the spike. And that's a completely reasonable way to play in your group, right?
In your group. Yes, that happens in the group. You know, somebody says, wow, you know, I can't deal with that. No problem. But I also, when I find myself in a different group, you know, that I'm not used to playing and stuff, that don't play by that rule, okay? I don't get bent out of shape. I don't throw my cards on the table or tip the table over, all that kind of stuff. I play with what I have and I learn what I can. I'll give you a quick aside story here real quick on Magic. Okay. We had a local group, went into Friday Night Magic every week. Well, the guy that was running it was one of the players, because the guy that owned the store, you know, didn't understand how the computer worked. So for 3 weeks in a row, he brings in this net deck. I think it was white and blue or something like that. And he brought it in, and he was just stomping everybody with it. And interestingly enough, I was picked 3 weeks in a row, totally randomly, of course, as the first player out. And he tromped me, and then, you know, with that one win, was able to wind up taking home the prizes every week. After the third week, went, oh, okay, I'm slow, but I get there. I saw the pattern, so I went home. And I created a hate deck just to kill blue and white, okay? Every hate card I could put in there that would kill blue and white. And lo and behold, on the fourth week, I was also chosen to, you know, be his first match of the night. Kicked his ass every way from Sunday. He almost cried. And, of course, I didn't win any other games that night, but that was okay. I made the point, you know what? He never played that deck again. So, you know, these kinds of things happen. Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
No, absolutely. And I think a lot of – if there's one art that has been lost in Battletech CCG that was very powerful, and there's still a few people who really understand it, it's the art of the sideboard, right? If you walk into a tournament situation, your sideboard your sideboard's really about several things. It's about, and Mark Roberts did an excellent article on the sideboard, which we should put in the show notes. Let's make a note of that. But it's about understanding what your deck's weaknesses are and what are the people that you're likely to face. And if something is dominant in the meta, the social effect of people sideboarding against it tends to knock it down. But almost nobody plays Battletech CCG that way anymore. They generally just bring their deck and they don't think about sideboarding, which means that you just have to agree not to bring a Sandhurst Royal Military Academy deck, just because it's not fair. And yeah, everybody knows it works, but like, we're done, right? That's known. We'll set that aside. It's not fun.
And is the sideboard, where did the sideboard came in? Is that a player generated rule, or was that part of the tournament scene as
It came from Magic. Magic had a 15 card sideboard. I don't know why BattleTech has an 8 card sideboard. Mm-hmm. But they just, the DCI said you can have a sideboard, and it's absolutely required for real tournament play when thinking about
Casual play, practically, basically nobody uses it. In casual play, what normally happens is that everybody brings two or three decks.
Or five or six,
or a whole, backpack full of them, like some people I know, self-included, guilty. You just bring a bunch of decks, and if one person decides that they're just going to keep on using this deck over and over again to trump everybody, you know what? I'm cool with that, and here's the reason why. I get to play all these other different decks and see how each one of them gets chewed up by that monster deck. And by the time I get home, I've got new ideas for like five or six decks. So, every once in a while, hey, bring out that Sandhurst. I want to try and see what I can do against it. So it's the thing about it is it's either a friendly environment or it's an antagonistic environment. And that's true of all CCGs as a general rule. I think BattleTech is more amenable to a friendly environment simply because it's gone. Mm-hmm. And if you want to sit down and play it with somebody, you better be friends. Otherwise, you're never going to meet up again, and your pool of available people to ever actually play it with is going to shrink dramatically and quickly.
That is 100% right. If there's a prize, there's a value at being an asshole. And if there's no prize, what is the point, right? We all have many, many games that we could spend our time on, right? It's a huge market out there. So don't be a dick about it. If you create a killer deck and it trounces absolutely everybody, the only people you should be playing it against are people who tell you, nah, that's not that great. Watch this. And then they actually want to test themselves against it. Yeah. Otherwise, take the point, shelve it, and move on.
Let's kind of use that to kind of segue. We talked about the fact that it is, a dead game. What do you guys know about kind of what surrounded that? Was it simply trying to eliminate competition of Magic because they were realizing from a business side that it was, that they were basically cannibalizing their own player base? Were there... what was kind of like what built into that, or how did the community react, and has been kind of the state of the game or the community following?
Well, I discussed that earlier from the aspect of, what was happening with FASA, which were the franchise holders, mm-hmm. okay, or the owners of the IP. Wizards of the Coast was strictly a franchisee. I think, and then Michael talked about, especially with the interview with Garfield, that they were coming to a point because they were so big, and Magic was, there was the point there at which they all of a sudden, now they're not making more money than everybody else put together. They're only making half of God's money, right? and so, at that point, the people who run the show have to sit down and make some business decisions as well. And that was one of the things, that they had to muddle through. And at that point, I don't think at that point that they actually realized, on the long term, over the long haul, that wasn't going to be that big of an issue. Example, Pokemon, still going strong. Yu-Gi-Oh, still going strong. Okay, so... that part of it, I think, is kind of a set aside.
I think I'm going to disagree with you there. I think the Pokemon player is not the Yu-Gi-Oh player, right? Sorry, it's not the Magic player. True. And the Yu-Gi-Oh player is not the Magic player, but the BattleTech CCG player is much closer to the Magic player. And I think that at a certain point, they just have to decide, where are we going to staff our developers? Are we going to staff them to this game, in which case they'll create this much of a return on investment, or are we staff them on this other game, and they're going to create a lot more return on investment? I don't think it would have, even if they'd kept up the decision to do BattleTech CCG, I just don't think it could have survived in Magic's shadow for much longer.
Now, see, that's where
player bases are too similar.
That's where I disagree. See, if I had been Magic back in the day, okay, and was seeing FASA failing, I would have made an offer and bought them out and let FASA then become the franchisee and I be the IP collector. You know, eventually Topps bought, you know, the BattleTech IP for a song, okay, while it was in one of the doldrum times. And I think that if they had done that, I think they would have found there would have been a divergence, okay? There would have been the only Magic player and the only BattleTech player, and then there would have been a third river there where you would have had folks that are totally comfortable with spending money on both. I don't think they would have lost that much by keeping it going that way. But in order for that to happen for them, in order for them to make it, you know, viable, as it were, they would have absolutely had to bought FASA out so that they controlled the IP themselves and not be a franchisee.
For that, I very much agree. I think anyone talking to FASA in the late 1990s and trying to plan out a multi-year product strategy on the basis of a franchise from FASA had good reason to be nervous. Yeah. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's especially...
Sad. And it was sad because BattleTech, they're 35 years now. Yeah. Okay, you track the game playing, the hobby world there, game playing and everything, basically starts in the 1940s, in the 50s. That's the era when you started seeing all kinds of games show up on the shelves of stores. All right, that's 70 years. Okay, it's 1950s to 2020, that's 70 years. Magic's been going on for how long?
25 years.
Okay. And BattleTech's been going on for 35 years. BattleTech has been there literally for half of the modern game publishing industry lifetime. Okay. That's not a bad track record.
There are very few IPs with that still have a lot of cachet today.
Yes.
That have that kind of age. Thinking about it, what have you got? You've got Dungeons and Dragons.
Yep.
And you've got Axis and Allies. But what else is from the early 80s?
That's still going strong. That's it. Having something like I say, so if they had walked to FASA and said, look, you know, we'll give you, you know, we'll buy it from you and then we'll franchise it back to you so you don't have the headaches of this, that, or the other thing. Then they could have done with the card game, whatever they would have done. And I think they would have been in a much better position now, even than they were before. But that's just personal opinion.
Now, have there been attempts or talks to people? You know, I assume it's Topps that owns the rights now, or with, you know, the resurgence of BattleTech and the Kickstarter, has there been interest and has there been people that have had those conversations?
The main reason for that is because if you want to resurrect BattleTech, the card game, now you have to go to not only Topps in order to franchise from them, because you'd have to go around, Catalyst Games because they're the franchisee now. So you'd have to get a very narrow franchise deal with the IP owners, and you would have to deal with Wizards of the Coast in order to resurrect the original thing. They have things like, you know, TAP, you know, is one of the very few things in the game industry which is actually, you know, patented. Okay, Wizards is not going to give you permission to use their system to put out a game that's going to compete with their product. It's not going to happen. So this is strictly a heritage game, as it were, that, you know, people will enjoy and will love, you know, as long as people are still alive, you know, that remember it and that play it and or who discover it. So slowly but surely, you know, there's getting less and less of us, and that's okay. You know, you can look around and find a lot of things that have been around for long, that, you know, that used to be around for a long time, not so much getting played anymore.
I don't know about that. Let me just say this. When I've put in a ton of effort, and I know Chester has too, over the last, let's say, 5 years to increase the reach of the BattleTech CCG and to, I guess, not just to remind people that it exists, but also to remind people that it was fun and they should try it again.
Right.
Come back.
And ever since the Facebook group has become more and more active. I mean, we're doing this, right? There's people who actually want to hear us talk about this stuff.
Right.
If you track it on like card prices on eBay, it's also been going up and up, which suggests that actually interest is growing.
Well, do you think that's tied into the Kickstarter? You know, it's brought attention back to the IP?
No, it's not tied into the Kickstarter. It's tied into the efforts that folks like me and Peter and Chester have been making over the last several years to increase the visibility and playability and the quality of the resources out there so that when people come back because of nostalgia, they stay because actually, hey, it turns out that this is actually really playable.
All right, BattleTech fans, I'm going to go ahead and cut there for this first part of my conversation with Michael and Chester. We actually went on for another 2.5 hours just talking about the gameplay. It is a wealth of knowledge, definitely kind of the helm memory core of BattleTech TCG. But I thought it was a little much to cram into one video, and this was kind of a natural split. But definitely subscribe and hit that bell notification to catch that next video when it's published. We talk about deck building. We talked about basic tactics. We talk about advanced tactics. We went through every card set to talk about kind of power cards and power combinations, both units, missions, and command cards. We talked about cards that were total crap that you should avoid. Pretty much everything that you want to know to kind of get a good start and hit the ground running if you're picking up this game. We also talked about getting connected and playing online. The prices are, can be a little high on eBay. Certainly, if you're not just buying old collections, you can also hit up the BattleTech CCG trade and sell page on Facebook, and I'll put that link down below if you want to pick up kind of the physical cards. But we also talk about getting connected to the community online and playing there, so on Lackey and Tabletop Simulator, so that you can do that totally free and play as much as you want with whatever cards you want. The sky is the limit. So definitely stay tuned and catch that if you want that information. In the meantime, you can always hit the BattleTech CCG Facebook page because all the links are there. And I'm also going to put links down in the description below for a lot of this information. So show notes, things that we talked about as we were going through. So check that out for sure. You'll also find down there a link to a Patreon that I set up for this page. If you want to support the channel, that would be amazing. Kind of having spent my career in the nonprofit sector, that kind of forced me to get comfortable asking for the community for support, whether they're in a position to give it or not. But if you are and you like this idea of having conversations to talk about gameplay and in the community, I definitely plan to expand this channel well beyond the trading card game. We do have a couple of the top players from the CCG back in the day that attended most, if not all, the worlds that'll be on for future episodes. But I'm also reaching out to developers, writers, pretty much anybody that can lend insight into the history of BattleTech, both as an IP and as a game. And so I'll be uploading those as soon as I can produce them and make them and have those conversations. And so if that idea excites you and you want to see more content like that, definitely connect with the channel, either subscribing, liking videos, commenting on the videos, supporting us on Patreon, connecting on social media, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. That is at RenegadeHPG on each of those platforms. That is it. So this is my first upload. I hope you guys enjoy. I can't wait to get the next one out for you. And I will be doing a little unboxing. I got a box of Counter-Strike here that I'm gonna film actually a little bit this afternoon and kind of share that with you to supplement the other unboxing that I did. So check that out for sure. And this is Travis signing off, and I'll see you on the next episode.